May the sacred presence of the One who said He would abide in His teaching be our guide. May we follow His glorious example and tread with unfaltering step this noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment.
All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Good evening, everyone. So tonight is the sixth of our six classes on the precepts. Last time, so we had the first five of the six classes mapped out. And so last time we asked you guys what you wanted to do with this last class. And we had started a process of investigating the individual 10 grade precepts and sort of rewriting them in our own words. And so we took your ideas, and we wrote them down on a piece of paper, and then decided that's what we would do tonight. So our game plan for tonight is to divide into small groups. We're going to try to do a small group exercise with this large group, which means actually making use of the whole building. So once you're divided up, feel free to spread out. And each group is going to have a precept. And it's going to be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10. And in that small group, if nobody in your group has a copy of the Kyoju Kaimon, we can either pass out chant books or I can run around and say, blah, 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 this is your precept. But in your small groups, we're going to have like 15 minutes to discuss sort of what this means for you, what's coming up for you, and then in that small group, come up with a rephrasing of that precept. Then we'll come back together and hear from the groups, and we can finish filling out
this chart.
We put these up, and I cracked up on this one. It still is cracking up. I'm totally like... I can't beat that. So we want to do that for the first half hour of the class, and then... We'll move into a discussion about what Jikai means in a personal way for those taking the precept. So perhaps, usually we don't like announce who's taking the precepts ahead of time because we want to give people the opportunity to bow out should they decide that this is not the year for them. No muss, no fuss, no harm, no foul. Like, if you decide that, you know what, I really don't think this is right for me right now, that's A-okay. However, if there are people who are planning on doing this and they're excited and want to self-identify, you know, we're not going to say you can't. So we'd like to have a discussion about what Jukai means, both maybe hearing from those who are taking the precepts, but also what it looks like for people who have had a precept practice for a long time. And so that way... sort of the old timers get a chance to share some of their experience, and those new to this form, this path, can learn from their experience, and that excitement from the people taking the precepts for the first time can help invigorate the old timers so they don't get too like that. And then, you know, if there's time and we can move into it, I really want to meet this question of talking about some of the poetic imagery that's in the precepts themselves, the phrases. Perhaps unpacking those more, really celebrating the beauty of it and the like that quality of investigation. If I give you like the Dogen code book and you have the answers and you can say this phrase means that, so now I've got it figured out, you're gonna lose something. Like And one, I don't have a code book. But it's super helpful, sweet, efficacious to watch how you're working with these phrases over the years and watch your understanding deepen and evolve. So it might be that when you first start off, a dignified sea of clouds means one thing, and then 10 years in, there's a different understanding, a more subtle understanding. Doesn't mean it's right, because I don't think there are any right answers or right ways to interpret these, but there's a more intimate connection between yourself and these phrases. Does that make sense? So, and then also looking at the different dharmas that are listed, the inexplicable dharma, the flawless dharma, the ungilded dharma, and looking at those qualities. But first we want to try this experiment of small groups. It's something that Carrie and I thought of initially in the past, and we're like, oh, there's so many people we can't. But somebody suggested it last night, so let's give it a go. The problem is we need to put you into 6 groups. And we thought about having you count off from 1 to 6. Mm-hmm. And then we thought about having you count off from 5 to 10. Now I'm not sure what's going to work the best. This is not my strong suit. Because usually I just talk to people.
Let's do 5 to 10.
5 to 10?
All right.
Five to 10.
Six.
Seven.
Eight.
Nine.
10,
5,
6,
7, 8, 9, 10,
1,
6,
7,
8,
9,
10,
5,
6,
7,
8,
9, 10,
5,
6,
7,
8,
9,
10,
5,
6,
7,
8,
5,
no.
can you tell us where we're gonna where each group meets?
Yeah,
no one's go to a place.
Yeah. Okay.
Five go that way. Six go.
No, we're going to. Anthony's Okay. 5, 6, and 7 go to the Zendos and find a corner. You have to sort yourself out.
Is it okay to break tea?
Yes.
Yes. That's so funny. Why
did? 8 can be in the entryway, 9 in this room, and 10 in the kitchen.
Whoa. It's not running.
This is not what I do.
All right, down to 9. 8, so. All right, 9. We got the best spot, right?
We do.
Precept of not indulging anger, not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is a brilliant sea of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds.
And you, it reminds me of something. I just want to get. Are there any more?
We can get your checkbook if you need a checkbook.
Well, or I can share with somebody. I was just wanting to hold it in my hand. That's okay, Joshi. I remember the first time that I took a precepts class, Gilbert was teaching. And somebody asked him about this. And he said, could you explain about this, you know, brilliant sea of clouds, dignified sea of clouds? He said, no. That was it. That was the answer to the question. And then, okay. Like, there was an unwillingness to try to corner it, or thank you so much, or define it, or quantify, or diminish it by dissecting it, or something. There was just, you know, just it is what it is. I'm not going to touch it.
I know there's that longer book that Kilian wrote, I guess, that explains it.
Is the American Brain? What is that? The American
Brain? Well, one that is one that is sitting up here. Yeah, one of those ones. But he, I was hoping to get that explanation, and now there's no.
Yeah.
Well, he. I don't know what examples he talks about in that book he made.
It's the precept guide.
Somehow it came up.
The precept study guide.
Study guide.
Yeah.
That's not a great explanation.
Well, would it even help you if there was an explanation?
Always gives you.
No. Not really.
No. And I think that if there were some sort of explanation,
I know that the best it would. Push it on people.
You would lose your own. You would lose the opportunity to explore what you're trying to create.
Force that.
Yeah. He said, "This is what he."
What are we supposed to do in these groups? Yes.
I think we're supposed to discuss it for 10. I wasn't given the amount of time. We're going to discuss it, what it means to us, and then we're going to refine what we talk about and make some things. Right, rewrite it, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, I didn't get it. How much time do we have?
Another
10
minutes.
Okay. So, what's jumping up for everybody with this?
Well, not controlling reality, then. It's like, you know, when I indulge myself in anger, when the anger is not passing, I am grabbing it and creating a reality.
Start to strong.
It's a separate self. Instead of just letting it pass, that's what kind of stands out, driving apart. And I do that, I just get really angry. I have to, it's a choice.
I love that it's called an indulgement. There's something about that, like, you know what I mean? It's like something rather almost like childish about it, like, that we kind of like it. You know what I mean? Like, want to be. There's something we get out of it for sure. I know I do, but there's some feedback I get from it. You know,
like you said, it was a choice. You have that like fine line right there. It's like, do you indulge yourself by just going for it?
Yeah. Or you're eating or something. Yeah. There's like a righteousness about it, isn't there? Of course I'm angry,
Right, but in order to do that, you have to form a self.
Maybe, and I don't really work with this, we'll see what comes out, but the concept of like stuff. Like, it's all 10,000 things, but then how 100 of those, and how much more valuable are those 100 feet?
What is this thing about not advancing, not retreating?
What about it?
Why is
the
thing?
Or each thing less?
What
does
it
mean? Another
thing about this one is, like, I've been noticing kind of accepting. We're standing in the present moment, being able to live where it is, not trying to get away from it, and trying to, like, fight against it.
There is, like, a comfortableness about it as well, isn't it, that wants us to
push or pull. Like there's something, there's like a euphoric bit to it, but there's also like an uncomfortable bit about it. For me, yeah, I feel like sometimes there's a little fear about how far it might go sometimes. Like there's a fear of like an uncontrollable kind of aspect to it, you know?
Yeah, there's a lack of control. It kind of draws you in. Mm. You know, you indulge in it.
Yeah.
And you can't regret it.
Yeah. There's something about it that's sweet and sugary at the beginning. It's like a...
By the end, you're like, yeah.
It's kind of like an adrenaline rush or something.
Yeah. And so I feel like that's not retreating and not advancing. It's something to do with that kind of rushing into it. Like, you know, something about, like, just being there.
And especially when you're
And those have done, I mean, actually used to a different phrasing of this precept around do not indulge anger, or do not unleash anger.
Mm-hmm.
And both this and that one strike me as being interesting, and that it's less about, like, it's not don't be angry or don't become angry, but it seems to be more about, like, more about what is the relationship we develop with this emotional state, rather than, I think that would be much more distress, or like have bigger questions about it. This emotion is bad, don't experience this state, right?
But
like, it seems to be more about develop a skillful relationship with this righteous and awkward and scary thing, no matter what it means to be human.
Yeah.
Because anger has a purpose. You know, it's just, it's just what really get into, though.
It's not wholly negative, is it? I mean, sometimes it's kind of justified and work like it's kind of the right thing.
Sometimes.
So
maybe this thing about indulging or unleashing. You know, that...
yeah, I've never, ever thought of
that. When you talk about that, we have a choice. You know, maybe that's where we have a choice. If we're going to indulge it, or if we're going to unleash it, or act on it in some way. I don't know that we always have a choice to feel it or not. I can certainly imagine situations where I would just be furious, you know. But then what you do with that anger,
that starts to bring other precepts into it. It's like if you open your mouth and say something, you're hurting somebody. There's lots of other things that happen when you get angry and involved in it.
Have you guys, what's... For me, when I think about getting angry, often it's underneath it is like a deep frustration. That's kind of like, when I think about getting angry, it's something is not going, like a frustration with a situation, and it's not going right. You know, and then anger might come up.
Not going right to you.
Yeah, right. But that's one, when I think about getting angry, that's the most common, for me, that's the most like common reason for me to like flare up. It's like a feeling of not being in control or something, or not like, just frustrated with something that is happening.
Oh, I think, yeah, in some ways it's related to like a... this is the way I should be.
Right. Yeah.
This is a measure of God.
Yeah.
Well, what if you're walking down the street and you see somebody
you
know,
like, you have like clenched fists, and we all have fists in our fists.
Eating a child.
You don't think it's angry, or you could just envy.
It's like no.
You know, anger, but like if you say anger, that sort of, that makes me think that that might not be.
Well, those are actions that might come about as a result of it.
But you can still, you can still feel like you're accused of feel. Anger is useful. It produces an activity of some sort. But what kind of activity would you use in that instance?
And I wouldn't necessarily say that that's where the entitlement aren't necessarily always like a bad thing,
right?
Like being justification, I'm like, I should be able to feel safe and included in my sangha or something like that. And, like, you know, people like suffer an identity, like that's not a bad entitlement, but it's an expectation people have, and it's not bad as people, right?
Is it always the reaction
to something really kind of feel like wrong? Like hit for me, the idea that like one of the precepts sort of involves all the
I mean, like beating a child.
It's just this idea of the expansive.
Wrong. You know, you're gonna do something.
People get angry about
like sharing understandings.
And then that's a different thing.
Maybe like sharing
something with each other. We can't offer too much about that, but there could be a small
amount of
anger.
There
could be a raging anger too.
Yeah.
The same.
Are you thinking about the same thing? I'm sorry.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think for me, I think that does ring true, though. That is something. Yeah. I think it does, for me, that is a kind of seed of anger. It's like, it's not.
But indulging it with these people would indulge. So you have that raging anger. So to indulge it would be, what would that be?
You know when. There's that initial flare, isn't it? I think you know when you're going further.
I do. That would involve reaction.
Yeah.
Right. So we have to restate this.
Oh, you have to receive it.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, okay. Oh, no. That's your concentration. You have 2 minutes.
Not
okay.
Indulge anger. Comforting anger. So that's the basic precept right there.
And we've got the selfless dharma. The realms of selfless dharma. So.
Don't feed the fire.
I think it should have something to do with indulge.
Yeah.
What was it that you said? Do not...
It's a community where we use this line, do not unleash anger.
Do not unleash anger. Unleash is interesting because once you unleash, you're sort of, you're not in control of it anymore.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's out there.
Yeah.
It's stated pretty clearly. I mean, it's hard to restate it.
It's hard to restate it.
Yeah, you're right. It is. It's pretty clear.
Like, the contriving part to me is like says it all. Really, I want people to get it.
Interesting. Yeah. How would we word it if we were going to put it in one of those like Christmas crackers or something like that, or a little like give like a little one of those chocolate kisses? You know, where they put pithy little things in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how would we rephrase it? Like, imagine we weren't going to get paid unless we completely rephrased it and repackaged it and gave it out to us.
Don't get maggot even.
Don't act in anger.
Don't do anything in anger.
Really?
Don't take action.
Don't be guided by anger.
Don't take action while indulging in anger. It means something that we shouldn't be doing anything with it.
Right.
Sometimes you do. I mean, like you say, when something, you see some abuse or something, you know, you see somebody really mean to a child or something, you speak up.
But then you might act out of compassion. And
right.
But that's what I was saying about that. It's like you beat, like, well, that angers me. I'm going to do something. But like going in there with, like, and hitting the person.
Right.
That's
right.
Not how you do it, right? You do it like some other legal way.
Don't be,
you know,
guided by anger.
It's just this massive. But that anger, I'm trying to think of it. Something. It's the that's the dangerous bit. Is the carrying on with it, you know?
It seems like it's tied in with the concept of self.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
So letting go of self mitigates anger. Letting go of self lessens anger.
No self, no anger.
No self.
No. There's a 14 piece.
That's true.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
You're right.
You should start at the end. And then we'll just like, but we have to be
able to come back to the room. So,
don't be nice.
Six groups and five colors.
Yeah. You write with. We're only gonna write with one.
Don't be.
You write with blue and purple. You write with blue and purple at the same time on the last one.
Ah.
All right, we gotta figure out.
We gotta figure out.
We have the answer.
The right answer.
The right answer. Capital letters.
Okay. See you guys. We are going to start. And
we have everybody.
Are there people still back there, or is everybody people coming?
There are people.
One person still coming.
Okay. Three empty seats.
I don't know. I was standing. So
we're going to start with group five. Who's group five? So group five.
What should we do? Stand up or
yes,
what?
Stand up and come gather together. Right.
Oh, all of us?
Everybody, do you know strength in numbers?
Yes.
We do have a special group for
secret people. So I'm just going to read it out loud. And then you all can talk just briefly about your experience talking about it, and then write the rephrasing of the question. We got not become intoxicated. Do not become intoxicated. Polish clarity. Dispel illusion. In the realm of the intrinsically pure Dharma. Not harboring delusions is the precept of not becoming intoxicated. We are naturally pure. There is nothing to be deluded about. This is enlightenment itself. Understand this truly, and no intoxicants can be taken.
So what was the experience like being together and talking about this precept?
It was good.
We kind of started with drugs and alcohol, and then we sort of broadened it to the different ways that are very comfortable to sort of zone out and lose awareness. And then we kind of came to this wonderful thing that Shar said that I really like. Everybody said good things about if this activity can present a middle path, then that's okay. If I cannot find a middle path on this, then I think I need to not become deluded in that way.
So we had moderation, being present, let go, don't run away. And being aware of escape mechanisms.
Well said.
Thank you.
Do not dwell on past mistakes. Create wisdom from ignorance. In the realm of the flawless Dharma, not expanding upon error is the precept of not dwelling on past mistakes. In the Buddha Dharma, there is one path, one Dharma, one realization, one practice. Do not engage in fault finding. Do not condone haphazard talk.
So what was this experience like? What came up for you?
We spent a fair bit of time talking about the haphazard talk. Most people, I think, interpreted it as gossip, but also what came up was empty talk, talk that you do just to fill the space,
And internal shame.
Yeah,
I think we have to talk about ourselves.
And unhelpful self-talk.
And how to kind of step away from that in different ways to kind of stop that.
And then we did come back onto, you know, the core precept of not, I mean, it's thing. That's why it's all in there. to not just feel terrible about your mistakes, but to learn from them and move forward in a healthy way. And it's hard to do that when you are wrapped up in it and dwelling on it.
We also talked about the realization that everything brought you here. So what appears to be a regret is an event in the flow of cause and effect that you need to kind of grasp and not reject. Not grasp, but you have to accept it. Acknowledge it. That's what I meant.
Well, and create wisdom out of it, which is an active part. Yep. So our sentence was just, would you like to write it if I read it? It was what you just said. Everything brought you here. Our rewriting of the future. So how would you rephrase that?
We No spin.
That was someone's Matrix reference, and I. That's okay.
Oh, I get the reference. It's cool. It's super cool.
They were talking about you and I and everything, and it just thing that came to mind was there is no spoon. There is no you and I.
Thank you. So it seems like you read a lot of that emptiness. Do not be mean with Dharma or wealth. Share understanding, give freely yourself. The genuine, all-pervading Dharma, being jealous of nothing, is the precept of not being mean with Dharma or wealth. One phrase, one verse, that is the 10,000 things in 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, that is all Buddhas and Dharma ancestors. From the beginning, not one thing has been corrupted.
Thank you. So what was your experience like?
Love. We talked a lot about sharing and release and authenticity, sharing of yourself, and being present. We talked about silently being present authentically as a way of sharing of yourself.
We talked about the difference between financial wealth and other types of wealth, and how for one of us, financial wealth wasn't even a consideration until this conversation tonight. I was really impressed by it.
And then for rephrasing,
we had a few. We had sharing is caring.
The more superficial members of the group.
And then the other one I think we had was like release, give authentically.
Yeah. Starting to sound like an ad campaign. We're products of our market.
Nueve? Nine?
There was other people in my group.
Do not indulge anger. Cultivate equanimity. In the realm of the selfless Dharma, not contriving reality for the self is the precept of not indulging anger, not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is a brilliancy of clouds. There is a dignified sea of clouds.
Anger is not necessarily a bad thing.
It's how we choose to respond to it. And often when we indulge in anger, we create a separate self that we usually regret what we end up doing. I know I do. You know, first you get into the anger, and it kind of feels good. And then after a while, you go, man, I wish I hadn't done that. You know, so there's that indulging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The difference of feeling anger and letting it drive us or mm-hmm. or acting on it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we were a long time trying to think of a phrasing for, like, we thought the most important aspect of this was the running with it, with building on it, with pushing it mm-hmm. forward, you know, and not the... We all agreed that there's a flare of anger every now and again. I don't think this is really saying don't do that. It's the forward bit, you know, the building on it, the making it bigger.
Yeah.
Feeding it.
Enjoying it.
Rowan mentioned a different phrasing of it, which is don't unleash anger. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty graphic.
Yeah. And we just left the glorious sea of clouds and dignified sea of clouds alone.
I told them that my first experience with that phrase, when I, the first precepts class that I took, somebody asked Kyogen if he could explain what that meant, and he said no. That was it. He wasn't willing to... touch it, define it, put it in a box,
right.
Belittle it. It's enough on its own. So we left it.
Oh, yeah. And she knew right now. You remember. She knew, right? You remember.
There's
no
okay.
We'll just sit down.
There's So now I'm stuck with a marker in my hand.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. We had difficulty. We did have difficulty because we all the phrasing are so perfect.
Yeah.
Indulging anger is so perfect. Like we all know what that means, you know.
Don't act in anger
or out of anger.
Or out of anger.
Unleash was nice.
Yes,
that really gives a certain quality to it. Don't unleash anger.
And don't
we
add
talk about
to it.
A lot of things.
Don't unleash anger.
Hmm?
Don't.
Let it go.
Anything else?
Don't enjoy it.
Do we not feed it?
I didn't say it, I'm just repeating it. It's much easier to be here than there, I tell you.
Well, this is pretty fun, too. You can try. Anger. What were you saying?
Feed.
Don't feed it. There's something about fire. Don't stoke the fire.
Yeah, and then also something about acting rooted in compassion rather than acting.
So that's the positive.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, it's going so much faster this way, right? Number 10?
Well, the rest of the time will be number 10.
Do not defame the three treasures. In the realm of the one, holding no concept of ordinary beings and sages, is the precept of not defaming the three treasures. To do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world, and the merit of this becomes the source of all wisdom. Criticize nothing, accept everything. Respect the Buddha, unfold the Dharma, nourish the Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
It was challenging.
There's a lot there. We all found different parts of that meeting helped out for us.
I feel like we all learned something. It was a nice sharing where we could just get a little deeper into it than we had been before. I have struggled with this one for years, and I felt like, what? But, sort of like we kind of got a handle on it a little bit.
Tell us.
I think what we were all saying kind of all came back to the accept everything bit in the end, and just not getting too attached to concepts of better or worse and what you can and can't do.
Yeah, and the other thing that we were coming to is kind of thinking of this in terms of like embodying was one word that came up, embodying or acting or
taking it up the practice
mm-hmm. kind of like a mm-hmm. calling to not just think about it or not just kind of think about whether this fits or doesn't fit, but really like embody what the three treasures are. Respect the Buddha, unfold the Dharma, nourish the Sangha, but these are like active things we do rather than just think about or read or recite.
Well, there's something about acceptance, something about not trying to put it in a box or ignore it. Because the one I'm, one thing that was said was a contrast between atheism, which is it's already been decided, leave it alone, it's gone, and agnosticism, which is I'm not sure. And there's something in here about just keep look.
Did you guys talk about copying others' part?
That's a good phrase.
Did you guys talk about copying others' part?
Yeah, that was part of it. To do something by ourselves without copying others. That kind of, again, that call to action, like, make this your own. It's not about...
What does that have to do with defaming the teachers?
We did talk about that.
I think it has to do with the sages and ordinary beings. Like, if you see someone else and it's like, oh, this is the way I'm supposed to practice, it's kind of selling yourself short, and holding them up as... an ideal.
It's sort of that it harks back to the praise yourself and blaming others. Mm-hmm. But I think the way I got to see it for the first time here was so respecting the Buddha had to do with that, with respecting the Buddha in ourselves and in others. Unfolding the Dharma. There's something about just doing something by ourselves without copying others. So it's like that's that taking it up, embodying. And then criticize nothing except everything that has to do with nourishing the Sangha. That's one way to think about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, I just came up with that, so who knows? But it sort of made sense to me. Because that is the thing, that's one of the things we talked about, is defaming the three treasures. And he goes and says all this stuff, and you're kind of going, but what does it have to do with the three treasures? But it turns out everything has to do with the three treasures. So, that's where we start, is we take the three treasures, and we have those three precepts, and then, but it's all there.
And perhaps the thing that is, like, just letting them sit there with that, practicing with them, or... Mm-hmm.
How did you rephrase that?
We ended up with embodied the treasures.
Yes. Okay, so embodied the three treasures.
Embodied the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody had said, don't slam the door. And I kind of looked up and like, hold the door open. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or at least open the door.
Yeah.
Keep it open.
Just keep looking.
Keep looking.
Good.
That's a start.
Thank you.
Good job.
Yay! Thank you for the facilitating.
We read a cover. There's six of them in the last week. Catching up, good catching up.
Thank you all for being willing to do that and get up here and write things down and talk about your ideas. I think small group activities is something that makes my little heart go, oh God, no. Just want to say thank you for doing that. There's a lot of wisdom in this room. Mm-hmm. Like I just want to name that. There's a lot of wisdom in this room, and there's a lot of wisdom that comes out of living a human life. And this is something that we're all doing, and we may think we're doing it well, or we may think we're doing it poorly, but it is something we're all doing. And you know, Carrie and I can stand up here and talk about the precepts, and in other years, other teachers can stand up and talk about the precepts. But this is really your life. And so incorporating these precepts aren't necessarily taking something outside and foreign and trying it on like a jacket, but it's really about discovering that inner wisdom. Because these are all things that come out of our shared human experience. Sometimes it takes us a little bit of time to recognize that these are ours, or to recognize that this is our wisdom. But eventually we usually get there. It's okay. So one of the things I'd like to do is to shift from this. Would anybody who's put something up here object to having this shared amongst the wider Sangha? Is there anything up here that somebody just totally does not feel proud about?
It's all wonderful.
Sonia, is this something that can be put into the e-bulletin as something that's come out of the precepts classes as rephrasings?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll make sure we did.
You're going to have to explain number four a little bit.
No! No!
No worries.
It's 15.
Okay, great. So one thing I'd like to do, we do have 30 minutes left. Is to talk about, we're not going to get through them. Maybe. So not necessarily splitting us up between people taking Jukai for the first time and people who have taken this 10, 5, 15 years ago, but just if somebody is willing to share and just compete into each other, just either what has your experience with the precepts been over the years, or what is inspiring you to take the precepts this year, if this is something that you're willing to share, just to get another facet of that human experience of working with the precepts. Does that make sense? Any thoughts? Yeah, good job.
So I'm going to take them this year. I've been coming to Drummery for 4, 6, or 8 months, or somewhere in there, and
steadily, really, since this class started. And there's a lot of reasons, but Genko, I actually feel like the way that you sort of represented yourself up there, you said, well, I kind of think it's this, but I sort of just came up with that. that we are sort of all looking at this together,
yep.
and it's non-authoritative, but still a extremely valuable ethical and moral guide.
Yep.
I think that that's why I want to take the precepts.
Thank you for sharing. John. I think the biggest thing for me over the years is that every year it's just so different for me. Mm-hmm. Every year something pops out that I'm working on that year, and it surfaces. I don't have to dig in and go, okay, which one am I going to work on this year? It just slaps me in the face and says, this is the one you're working on this year. So I think that's, and it's always different. Mm. And every year it's different for me.
I almost want to like scoot you guys around so you're facing each other. I took the precepts last year. I waited a year before having taken them, and I took them because I really needed to. I felt very lost in my life. It felt like, try to describe it as it felt like I was lost in some woods, right? And there are a lot of really familiar things in the woods, but I didn't have any sort of like frame of reference for what those things were. I was just familiar with them. And when I came across the precepts, they were all incredibly, it was very familiar to me, but I feel like there was something a little extra there, and I now had a path to mm-hmm. follow, or some sort of guide to not feel so in danger in mm-hmm. my life. Mm-hmm. So, they're very special.
How has it been having worked with them for a year?
It's the same. I still feel that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's true. Different things come up at different times, and it's really beautiful how they evolve and change with you. Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful that it still seems to hold that sacredness as well, though.
Yeah, it's hard for me to sort of like really come to like a firm commitment to take the precepts, in part because it's a really, really good way of seeing like where I'm contracting around certain thoughts, like where there's tension in my mind about something. And as I've worked with it, like I come to see that like each one of these is like so vast and expansive and open, and just like there's a sense of embrace, and with that embrace is like something sort of just like melts away. There's a little bit of like ease, mm-hmm. and I find whenever I'm getting more in touch with sort of the intuitive aspect that this is opening me up to of experience of life. Like I'm happier and I'm able to be with others in a much different way, and that's a really, really big gift. And I think that's a really big part of it. Like it's a gift, and I honestly cried from the first time like I read that introduction about like you know like this is from the Buddhists, right? And they're kind of like welcoming. And saying like, yeah, like compassion, acceptance, love, like this is for you as well. And I'm sure for me, I wasn't always that in life. So there's a big aspect of like, yeah, like that's here, and it's here.
Thank you. And so you had a hand
up? Yeah, they resonated with what a lot of people have said so far. But I think when I came, I took the precepts pretty quickly. And I felt like I was just starved for them. I feel like I was,
I needed that, like Amber was saying, I needed that frame of reference. I was sort of flailing around, and I felt like they gave me a way to not flail around so much. And I always have just felt like they were such a gift that I'm grateful for. Even during the period when I wasn't coming to the temple, I still held the precepts close to my heart and was truly grateful for them. Now I think, I mean, still feel those ways, but when I read them, when we work with them, it's just such a mirror to reflect to like what's going on with me. It's like, oh yeah, I think I'm doing that right. and they do get kind of deeper and deeper. It's like, oh yeah, I see how it's a little bit of this, you know.
I have been involved in another spiritual practice for a number of years. And it was helpful for a time, but after about 2 years, it seemed like it wasn't getting anywhere. I started redirecting my thoughts and energies toward, you know, Buddhism. I had an interest in it, but I thought it was maybe time to look a little further. I went to the beginner's retreat in September, and by the end of that retreat, I knew, I said, this is where I need to be. Mm-hmm. And so I started becoming more involved with the services, the workshops, and the retreats. And the logical thing that I discovered or found was I need to take the precepts. This is the next place I need to go. And reading them and coming to the workshops, it's like, it's just the logical next step. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm here. And I'm also, I feel like this is also going to help me be more a part of the Sangha. You know, I kind of take a step more forward toward it. You know, have a real place here. You know, instead of being kind of on the outside. You know, I've only been here since 5 months. So, you know, still feel kind of like an outsider.
I love a familiar face.
I like the balance of the intuitive aspect and the logical aspect. Mm-hmm. Those are both true, in a way.
Sorry, do you have something?
Sure. Maybe because we spend so much of the year chanting in Japanese that whenever we get around to chanting the precepts, it just hits me, and I just, like, to me this is just, it kind of takes me to ground zero in my practice. And so yeah, it's just like this very fundamental, visceral feeling for me when we chant the precepts. This, it's definitely different every year, and this term it's been like really just this mirror for everything I've been looking at karmically. I've been able to kind of trace back to something in the precepts, so it's been a really useful tool. And then I just find the language so beautiful, and yeah, it's just been a really rich part of my practice over the years.
Just to add on to every lovely thing that was said, it's such a gift to do this with all of you. And I wasn't going to take the precepts, and I decided, I think, because of this experience working through them with you all, and the way that I would leave them at home every day, and then I would come here and you would blow my mind. It just made it such a rich and meaningful experience, and so I'm really grateful to everyone in this room for letting me be a part of it. Thank you.
I took the precepts last year, and I haven't been able to get to the classes this year, but it's very familiar to go, oh, I get that, and then he keeps talking, and then a bunch more things I don't understand.
Right.
And then he wrote something, oh, I get that, and then he says something else. But one of the things that is coming back that is so powerful about the precepts compared to other journeys in my life is that he talks about not just what you want to avoid doing, But what it is that causes you to do that. Mm-hmm. So anger is a big one for me. And I realize, it says in there, it's from thinking the world should be other than it is. And so that has I've been working on that all year. It's like when reality is suddenly not the way I like it, what use is there in anger? There's no use in it. But I, you know, that's what I did. But that, you'll help me become what I want to become by teaching me the underlying parts of it. Not just you should, you know, or you shouldn't. But here's the funny thinking that's getting you in that spot. And that's the powerful thing for me.
So this is wrapping up our last precepts class of this year. We do it every year. And I want to say that it's been an honor and a privilege to lead this class with Carrie. And you guys touch my heart. You really do.
And I think that's the gift of, like, us working together as a group. Just, it's not just the precepts on our own, on a mat. It's just like us wrestling with it, investigating it, living it with each other.
Always remember to ask questions. Go deeper. Do you have anything you wanted to say?
No, that was it. I feel like everybody has their own facet of understanding and perspective, and just when we're together, it's beautiful to me.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Best person,